pay. Of course, I surrendered to the inevitable and counted the coins. 13 gold. Payment accepted, the guard grumbled, putting the money in his waist pouch. It is free, and good thing, too, he's not a worker anyway, just thinks about food all the time. He even tried to devour a slime. The collar on the creature's neck softly clicked, opened, and flew to the ground, glued to his belt. The collar was not a normal one. With such a device, one cannot escape. There is also a leash invisible to the naked eye. Players are certainly not subjected to this often, but locals sometimes, especially if the perpetrator is a thief.
"Thank you, thank you,"
squealed the bog creature, jumping for joy.
"Thank you, dear friend, thank you."
A second passed, and the frail figure was by the lattice leading to the drainage wells, huddled under the rainpipe in the wall of a house. Another second, and the grill rose and then fell back into place, and the bog creature disappeared, dipping into the underground catacombs of Algora. From the dark throat of the tunnel came a triumphant screech, rapidly receding and becoming slurred.
"I am free! Free!"
20 coppers, said the guard mutedly, looking in the same direction as me, at the drainage gate, which was already almost silent. "Eh?" "I said 20 coppers. That's the cost of the prison robe carried away by the perpetrator himself. Pay up."
"Damn it."
20 coppers, pay up. Yes, yes, paying. Damn bog creature and his damn fish. Chapter 2. Campfire, Campfire. Cedric the Terrible. Cursed by God. As planned, my first plan of action was to visit my private room and leave there all things that were superfluous. For example, Grimm's medallion, the properties of which I had not yet looked at. Not because of negligence, no, only because of a reluctance to hurry. Time was running out. I had promised to meet with my new companions and sit by the fire. And so I wasn't going to hurry. I'd drink a little virtual wine and have a look at the flashes of a digital campfire and at the sky of Valdira, existing only in my imagination. And then I would go back to my private room and attend to business, of which I always had a ton, and which I always set aside for later. The careful inspection of my winnings, finding the fitting equipment, further planning, etc., 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 and all the while the soul wanted only one thing, a little rest, and I couldn't resist the urge. The outing in the breeding grounds and the violent fight with a werewolf had exhausted me too much. I left on my person only the gold coins, and, going out of the hotel, went first into the wine shop, where I bought 12 bottles of red wine, young, sweet, and tart, as the local salesman had said. That's good, exactly what was necessary. Let others drink the old bitter and sour wines. In the same shop I bought a tremendous package of marshmallows. I reached the magic shops with a fast pace and bought a few scrolls of teleportation. After making sure that nothing was forgotten, I activated a scroll and found myself at the entrance of the breeding grounds, 20 paces from the entrance. With a glance at the entrance, shivers immediately went down my spine. In spite of the night time, almost nothing here had changed. The same brisk trade went on, and players in white cloaks with a red cross were still among the crowd, shouting to advertise and enlist. Someone cried out mournfully, asking people to help retrieve the weapons they had lost in the caves, as usual. This is understandable. Valdira never sleeps, and underground there is never any light anyway. Plus, there are extra bonuses in the night time, and perhaps extra problems, or both. For example, creatures may emerge out of the caves and delight the players sitting around and minding their own business. At night, anything can happen. There was a strange excitement at the entrance to the breeding grounds. Here and there were torches stuck between the stones, and many magicians had conjured balls of light, so there was enough light that I could see all the details. And the more I looked, the more I was surprised. The overall impression was that a battle group was forming at the edge of the cave, and the whole group paraded around in white cloaks with a red cross. That is, the group was purely clan, no strangers. And the guys who gathered looked rather serious, soldiers in massive armor, magicians, healers, and several players whose classes I couldn't guess at first glance. A total of 15 or so, large levels, too big for this dungeon. Either the entire clan of the Scarlet Cross was suffering from insomnia, or something else. Despite the fatigue, I was interested. Asking those gathered by the entrance was useless, they wouldn't be up to it. And it's not like the clans to welcome excess curiosity. Besides, as I watched, the clan revised the order of battle and sank into the blackness of the entrance. The raid began. But a little away from the entrance there was a blazing fire, and I directed my feet to go that way. Curiosity is not a vice. Coming closer, I got behind the players and began to listen.
"Then we saw them!"
excitedly blabbered a copper-haired elf, clearly not repeating these words for the first time.
"Yeah, right," growled the warrior man, dressed only in a standard diaper. "Harpoon in my belly you saw, but you didn't see them."
"And then your heels flew away into the darkness, and you cry, Mommy,"
the elf laughed sarcastically, slapping his knee. By the way, the elf was wearing exactly the same thing, only the diaper.
"And you wouldn't have yelled?"
the warrior sheepishly muttered, and sipped hurriedly from a leather wineskin. "So unexpected."
"I also yelled, was so scared,"
said a blonde girl quietly, wearing a skin-tight leotard.
"And had no time to heal anyone. You flew away so quickly, just like that. And poof, and then us too, harpooned."
"What the hell happened, guys?"
boomed an approaching gnome with a spade beard.
"What is it, a boss or something?"
"Yeah, right, nothing like that,"
said the elf determinately, whom apparently it did not bother to repeat the same story over and over.
"Boss, ha! Grebhawks, that's what."
"Who? Who? Grebhaw?"
the gnome faltered on an unfamiliar word.
"Grebhawks! Horror! Harpoons! Poison! Armor! Ghostly light! And the agony!"
"Huh. That's what it is," I muttered under my breath, trying to recall the Grebhawks. Something fresh in the memory. Something to do with extremely rare shellfish. Predatory shells, to put it simply. This information was the best I could come up with in my exhausted mind, but I still didn't understand all the hype. And why was the Crimson Cross suddenly involved, tearing into the dungeon in such a large group? Not because of shells. A discussion continued in the meantime, and I didn't fail to overhear. A few minutes of listening, and I was aware of what happened. The truth was this. A group of 8 players went to the breeding grounds. They reached the last level quickly enough and, unlike our group, decided to try their luck and have a look at the very bottom, a chance paid for in full. At the entrance, a warm welcome awaited them, and not from kobolds, but from another alien monster. It all played out like a horror movie, with terrible, highly unexpected special effects. Out of the darkness there flew thin spears, and they stabbed the warrior in the front of the team in the stomach. A strong jerk, and the screaming warrior was dragged into the darkness. In another moment he died, but more harpoons had already flown from the abyss. Part of the group ran off, and the rest flew back to the revival location. It wasn't the death of their teammate which frightened the players, but the stealth and invisibility of the enemy. But that's not the point. Many are killed in the breeding grounds, not a rare case. The point is, the monster, as soon as the players were in the revival location and started yelling about the horror, instantly a couple of the soldiers of the Scarlet Clan approached them as if they materialized out of thin air at the mention of the word spear or ghostly light. The victims were questioned, and afterwards each was awarded 10 gold coins for the information. And in another 3 minutes, fighters of the Scarlet Clan began to appear at the entrance of the caves, hastily forming a battle group. That's the point at which I got there, in the midst of organization.
Much was cleared up, but questions remained. What had frightened the Scarlet Cross so much that they had so quickly rushed after these mollusks? Do they have shells of diamond or gold? I highly doubt that. Hell, no matter how hard I try, I can remember nothing about the Grebbehrochs. Memory is peddling the same information. Shellfish, shells, light, harpoons, poison. They live in a location of... the location of... But I do not know. I have never heard of a home location of Grebbehrochs, and do not know where they live. Right, Grebbehrochs are related to gravers. They live in water and darkness. Sometimes they suddenly appear in a particular dungeon, pleasing all players with their presence. Grebbehrochs are certainly not registered in the breeding grounds. And it was not clear how they got here, having immediately sent a few players to the revival location. Roughly speaking, there are still some monsters to be killed in the breeding grounds. It turns out that the Crimson Cross went to destroy them, so that nothing could come in the way of newcomers and their adventures. Honorable cause, as grown-up players should act when a graver is born in the dungeon. "Rigging," said a familiar fellow from the Scarlet Cross grudgingly. From him I had bought a colorful booklet about the karst caves. Catching the sea-soaked C-word, I stopped digging in my own memory and listened, pricking up my ears to the conversation. "What rigging?" repeated the surprised girl in a skin-tight leotard, which seemed to have replaced her standard T-shirt and diaper, modest and tasteful. "From the Grebbehrochs there can be obtained an almost perfect rigging," willingly explained the player in a white cape. "So, kids, if you see these monsters anywhere, just tell us. No one left without a reward, all righty?"
"Award," said the girl, hurt. "All of my equipment was left there."
"We'll return it," said the fellow, very seriously. "If it's still in its place, we'll retrieve it."
"Oh, thanks."
"What about my stuff?" said the dwarf, above whose shoulder loomed the man in a diaper.
"We'll gather everything and return it, in gratitude for the information about the shells," reiterated the player of the Scarlet Cross clan, hitting his chest with his fist for validity.
"So it's for rigging? You're joking."
"Eh, you ground rats." He shook his head, although he did not look at all like a sea-wolf.
"What do you mean, joking? Running rigging, attachments, mast-arms, to raise and lower the sails and stuff?"
The fellow stopped in embarrassment, and I realized that he himself was not really well-versed in this matter. Might have caught a couple of terms from other people and used them at the right time, and had exhausted his entire stock in just a few moments. But I could go on much longer. If desired, I could even list several famous ships from the past. All the lines, sheets, halyards, braces, and so on. No way to erase it from my memory. Although the sea is definitely not my thing, it's all my father.
"And how is it perfect?"
The girl did not let up, obviously excited about her equipment being returned.
"Resistance to damage," said the youth, already turning. "Very strong, stable, physically and magically, plus... in short, the best material for running rigging. Clear? The ideal material. And if you enchant it for additional strength and put it through the hands of a master, you get a real fairy tale. Got that, kids?"
"Righto, Daddy,"
squeaked the girl. The rest of the crowd laughed and excitedly began to say something, but I did not hear because I walked away with a quick step, having completely lost interest in the topic of conversation. Rigging. Accessories for ships. Even for a fool it is clear for which ships. Work at the shipyards does not stop for a second. And they are not just ordinary ships, they're masterpieces, not even only by their form, but also in their content. From small ships to giant monsters, choose any one and get to work. The options are countless, there is much to choose from. But as for the materials, that is the important part. The ship can be constructed from conventional timber with hemp rigging and silk sails, the standard option, and almost no chance of reaching the lost continent. To go sailing along the coast, a sweet deal. For fishermen or small merchants, this is perfection, spacious and relatively cheap.
One could also build a ship out of unique and raw materials, insert special artifacts, inscribe protective runes, hang amulets, and charm the sails. Very much can be done. Everything depends only on money. Rigging of Grebbehrochs, one of the most expensive options, because they are unpredictable, and they are never in groups of more than two or three at best, most of the time only one. There is no home location for them, and if there is, I cannot imagine where. Although I firmly know that this location, if it exists, is full of high-level players, day and night hunting after these creatures for their strong harpoons. And if the location is occupied by a powerful clan, they destroy not only the predatory shellfish, but all those other players who happen to wander by. Competition. I am confident that if there was Grebbehrochs rigging on the market, it has already been bought by the wealthy clans for big money, bought and turned into a ship's rigging at the speed of light. Right. But I do not have to worry about it. For me, there is always going to be a place on a ship, as long as I could get the necessary mana points. Remembering an unfinished business, I abruptly turned around and hurried to the tall, cloaked figure who had not had a chance to leave and was left to answer a barrage of questions. He, however, seemed to like to play the role of omniscient guru, which was understandable. Any other player would not have been able to put up with it, though. I, for example, would have howled at the second hour of such a life. To walk to a location, explain everything to newbies, distribute flyers, reassure fallen heroes, inspire them to repeat the attempt, absolute darkness. For this work, one must be a real nurse, only with a beard, armor, and an axe at the ready. Here, to repay my debts for the booklet. Thanks, I nodded.
Huh?
The fellow momentarily broke away from the story and focused his eyes on me.
Aha! Hey! Debt accepted. We are even. Thanks, small fry. Good luck.
And you, I chuckled, turning back again. One less debt. That's good. I don't like debts. Forgetting about me, the fellow continued his lecture, not forgetting to put the gold in his pocket.
If a Grebbehrochs is tame and you put him in a special water tank on the upper deck, he will make a kick-ass gun harpoon. Have you heard about the big fish in these oceans? That's right. That's where you'll need these shells. And aim is not necessary. Poke a finger, the Grebbehrochs fires his harpoon, and it's done. All that remains is to drag the fish in and collect the trophies. And in naval battle, the Grebbehrochs are needed too. Makes a great harpoon gun. You laugh? Shoot the side and reel the enemy to your craft just like that. Well, I guess that's really what we need them for. There is a pirate clan hunting on the seas, a whole fleet. In their main ship live as many as 10 Grebbehrochs. Their rigging is so strong that you can't cut through it and can't climb over.
Why harpoons? Surely you could just use magic, squeaked the indignant girlish voice.
Ha! Magic, snorted the fellow. Ships are protected. Amulets, talismans, artifacts, and special materials for construction. Laughing? Not every ship, of course, but the clan, almost everything. So magic won't do it alone. Grebbehrochs, catapults, explosive and fiery potions, acolotes, saboteurs. Ah, romance.
Somewhere about a year ago, there was a very cool thing that happened. I thought, I wouldn't get out alive. A lot of people died. I had gone so far away already that I did not hear the continuation of the story. Newcomers eat up such stories. I was the same in my time. Passing the watchtower, I pulled up at the counter of another sleepy cellar and settled another due for the unique anti-prot boots that were not in the end very useful. Saying goodbye to the merchant, I continued on and headed to the revival location. A couple of dozen steps forwards, and I stopped and chuckled in surprise. I was standing on a small hill, and before me stretched the nearly indistinguishable dark ribbon of the river, on the shore of which gleamed no less than 24 fires. Well, and which one was mine?
Hey, hey, hey! I heard a familiar voice, and, smiling, hurried towards the call.
Bomb,
professional ass. Even his call corresponds to the unspoken name of his beloved profession. Everything seemed very cozy. A neat fire, a stock of firewood, and several thick logs placed around the square. In the grass were perched a few pot-bellied bottles and bundles. There was even a guitar, so simple and unpretentious that it seemed absolutely real and not digital. The fire, however, looked somewhat otherworldly. Instead of scarlet and yellow flames, there shimmered at least a dozen different shades, including ghostly green. Probably someone had added some magic powder to the flames. The whole company was assembled around the fire in exhausted poses, like tired hunters. Kaelin Seeker and her dwarf companion sat side by side, and Bomb and Doc were on the other side of the fire. And Orbit was there too. The hairless elf sat on the grass, close to the fire, staring into flames, sitting so close that he was nearly about to fall in. Maybe it was for this reason that the bald head sported so many scars? Maybe he burnt up a bit, 20 times.
"Happy returns," greeted Baum, slapping a log with his hand. "Sit."
And I sat, meaning flopped down backwards upon the log, and with a long sigh of relief, stretched out my legs. Tired. "Soon decay is going to begin," I thought for the umpteenth time that night, the thought flashing in my clouded mind. And I didn't want to exit Valdira. Not now, when so much is left undone. Reaching into my bag, I retrieved the wine and marshmallows and handed them to Baum. "Hold this."
"Holding it?"
Baum nodded, handing everything to Doc, all except for 2 bottles of wine and a pack of marshmallows, which somehow casually went directly into his bag.
"Baum," I said reproachfully. "For later," said the half-orc, who already had no sword or shield behind his back. Everything was in the bag, respectable. "For later," I chuckled, as though we would still have meetings and general business. But who knows, everything is possible.
"Marshmallows, wine, and stars," Kaelin said dreamily, opening the bag of sweets. "Cool. Thanks, Ross. By the way, don't take it personally."
"Yeah?"
"Can you take off the mask and hat already? Somehow it doesn't really fit for the occasion."
"Oh, damn," I muttered, and, to the sound of laughter, pulled off the mask and wide-brimmed hat. "There's the masquerade in Algora again, so I..."
"There's always a masquerade there," grumbled Baum. "Slackers."
"And yourself, then?"
Doc pinned him, uncorking a bottle of wine.
"And I am on a break," retorted the half-orc. "A short one. I sit here with you for a bit and then go back into the cave, only first to the village and the personal room, and then back here."
"Again in the cave?" I was amazed. "Aren't you going to be sick?"
"Me? Sick from filling up my own bag?"
Baum was amazed.
"Yeah, right, right. I'll be sick if I went a day without filling it about 10 times over."
"Interesting," drawled the half-elf, and again stared into the fire. "Oh, before I forget," said the startled ass, and, running his hand through his bag, he fished out a bundle of burgundy. "Here you go, boss. Red coats. For the quest, from the bald elf. 5 pieces. Sign here to obtain."
"Huh." I was amazed, holding out my hand.
"Orbit? And you?"
"I have them,"
shrugged the melancholy elf. "This is for you. A gift.
A royal gift. Now I don't have to go back to the breeding grounds. But where did the elf get the coats? Something doesn't add up. Or was I not paying attention? In any case, I wasn't going to refuse a gift.
Thank you," I said sincerely. "I owe you."
"Eh," Baum sighed. "And I thought we could go in again together. We didn't do a bad job. For wealth and for experience."
"I'm glad you enjoyed it," I smiled.
"Maybe we can stop talking about work," said the offended woman, taking a crystal goblet filled with wine from the dwarf.
Where did the glass come from? Does the dwarf always carry it for his girlfriend? Possible. Cray was clearly head over heels for the girl, treated her like a princess.
"'It's not work, but the meaning of life,'
didactically boomed the half-orc.
"'Yeah,'
echoed Doc. "'I would take another walk in the caves, too. When will I ever find such a group?'
"'Join a clan or something,' shrugged Cray.
"'What do you think I am, a stray dog?' said the offended doctor. "'And anyway, I want to join the clan as a gifted healer.'
Another diagnostic of Valdira. Many players would prefer not to join a clan just as another member, but as a highly skilled character. In most cases, nothing good comes from these desires. Alone, it is difficult. Even among such cases as being the unique navigator, I am only irreplaceable until the first ship pokes its nose upon the shore of the lost continent. Immediately after that, all indispensability ends. "'Let's not talk about work,' I said aloud, sipping wine straight from the bottle.
"'Come on, then, and how about you?'
immediately reacted Kaelin. "'What about me?' I was surprised.
"'Ha!' growled Baum. "'We already heard enough. You're a legend of Valdira, right? There is even a sight about you. Respect!'
"'This is a coincidence,' I waved sincerely. "'Believe me, guys, I do not need this grandiosity. I'm just playing.'
"'Just playing? What about Lizana? Part of gameplay?'
"'A job turned up,' I said. "'Why not earn a couple of dozen gold coins? Would you have refused, Bomb?'
"'Of course not. Gold is gold. I would have agreed to kiss a sweeper, too.'
"'Here I am saying the same thing,' I agreed, and added, "'Nothing to say about me, really. Everything is on the site. There's a video. Simply look.'
"'Yeah,' Kaelin nodded. The video is simply ridiculous. And what are you going to do now?
Play? I smiled.
Such an answer is unacceptable. The girl inflated her lips. I understand that it's not that simple. You ride from tournament to tournament, quest to quest, and you went to the breeding grounds not for experience but for the cloaks, right?
In principle, yes, I nodded, to improve my reputation with the village.
And why do you need it?
"'To get an appointment with a local landowner and patron, Mr. Cedric,' I replied. There was no sense in lying.
"'To Cedric?' Doc was surprised. "'Why to him? Do you want to lease land or a farm? This can be done through the headman.'
"'Farm?' I was surprised. "'No, I just need to talk to him. And he does not accept if reputation is too low. And what farm?'
"'Well,'
Doc hesitated. "'I would like to have one. A piece of land, a little house, a small vegetable and herb garden, and start from there.'
"'That's a hell of a plan.'
I shook my head in amazement, and the others nodded in agreement.
"'I just want to become an herbalist with time,' said Doc. "'But running through the forests to collect herbs is not for me. They'd kill me there. I'm a doctor. So I want to grow herbs on the spot and sell them to the alchemists.' "'Here, in this area, the land is very fertile. Best to grow all sorts of grass.'
"'Grass?'
Orbit piped in.
"'What grass? Strong?'
"'Humph!' grunted Baum.
"'Oh, burning moss! We never found it! Guys, can we stir up another raid right now? How about it?'
"'You already visited your private rooms?' I retorted. "'Put away the gold?'
"'Nah,'
wilted Baum. "'As for the gold, well... Only one item sold for a lot, and the rest. But this isn't a problem. Let's go. First to the village, 5 minutes to visit the private rooms, and then back here. And we march to battle again.
I cannot. I shook my head. Though extra experience wouldn't have hurt. And neither would the money.
Doc?
Eh?
I have one friend, I mused, an alchemist, a very enterprising guy. I should introduce you, remind me later. By the way, let me put you in my friends list.
Heh, comedian, boomed Baum. I already did it. If there's another profitable little business that comes up, call me immediately.
And me too, butted in
Kaelin, obviously annoyed that the conversation was flowing past her.
I want adventure.
Yes, the girl was offended. All were ignoring her, except Cray. But she does not realize that it's because of Cray that they ignore her.
because the dwarf has an extremely negative attitude towards any attempt to draw away the attention of Kaelin. Basically, he's in love, it seems to be so, and jealousy guards the object of his affection. He shouldn't be surprised when it leads to the opposite feeling. "If we plan new adventures, we'll be sure to tell you right away," I promised. The group satisfied me completely. Besides, we already had experience with joint maneuvers.
"So, what was that quest about Grimm?" asked Kaelin.
"It seems that I wouldn't be able to wriggle out of this one. Well, right. This is probably what is expected of all gaming legends. Long and exciting stories of their adventures in full color, and fantastic details and enchanting effects. And no one will know if I start to wander. I'll have to improvise. Luckily, I had prepared a story of my version of the events. It all started with a small event. I won the tournament with an acquaintance, and there were no signs of trouble," I began, and Kaelin immediately interrupted.
"And who is this?"
"Casual acquaintance," I shrugged, and again did not lie. I had met Kira by chance, and Gasha, too. "So we won that tournament, organized by Grimm the Inconsolable. We received gold cloaks and were very, very pleased." "I would be too," Baum muttered, sighing enviously. "And then," I said, in a deliberately husky voice, "immediately after the tournament, I made a visit to the Mages Guild, where I was met with open arms. I was taken into a small and dark room, where I was told about the dark side of Grimm the Inconsolable, the terrible and bloody silver werewolf. I learned that the werewolf was on a hunt for my head." I spoke for a long time. To the accompaniment of a crackling fire, throwing a dim glare on our faces, and the tart sweetness of red wine. I told the story of Grimm, and how he stabbed his beloved, how he hunted after tournament winners, the fact that the lair of the dreaded wolf is under the Temple of Tribulation, and one can only pass through it through a blazing flame. I told about how Grimm fled from the battlefield. In general, I tried to add as many colors and spectacular details as possible, omitting any mention of the mysterious medallion of Kira and the Albatross clan, and I did not mention the legendary armor. It worked. They were fascinated and listened to everything. No one interrupted. I tried to sit straight and not to make any unnecessary movements, not scratch in a questionable area, for example, because I was convinced that I was being recorded, maybe by one person, maybe by everyone. I would not like to see myself later taking a pause from telling my heroic adventures to attend to an itchy groin. When I finished the story, it was 4 in the morning, and so the time had come to say goodbye. I had to go back to Algora. Getting up, I stepped up to Kaelin and handed her a scroll. "I return the favor," I said. "Thank you, Kaelin." She nodded, and the gnome took the scroll instead of her, and put it busily into his bag.
"Where are you going?" Kaelin mused.
"That's it. Time to sleep," I smiled. "And you as well. Best not to wait until decay."
"And it is a real thing?" she asked in disbelief. "Never happened to me yet."
"There is decay," I affirmed. "And it's an unpleasant thing. Okay, guys, I have to go. Thank you for the evening. Everything was great."
"See you later?"
Kaelin demanded, and Cray grimaced in displeasure.
"Damn."
"You better believe it," I promised. "You are all in my list of friends. If something happens, I'll call you for sure. And you don't forget to write sometimes."
"On your fan site, it said that your messenger is blocked completely," muttered Cray. And I put a check mark.
The dwarf had not only watched the movies, but also read the forum. What for? Simple curiosity? Or something else? Or am I completely paranoid? God knows. "A block," I said, "for all except those with a check mark."
"Did you put a check on me?"
Kaelin livened, looking at me through her glass.
"Am I marked?"
"Uh-huh," I nodded. "Email me at any time."
"If you ever want a donkey, you know where to find me,"
the orc shrugged.
I am here for another week, not less. I'm in the game very often. Sometimes I sleep here.
Me too, hastily said Doc. With Bomb. I mean, I do not sleep with him, of course, but also in the caves. I sit and wait, awaiting a new adventure. So remember, Ross, the doctor will always be happy to see you.
I'll find you, an echo came quietly from the fire, the bald elf sitting there, embracing a bottle. With you, life is interesting.
It sounded scary. The bald elf could find me wherever I was, that's for sure. Waving goodbye, I stepped back and activated the scroll. A soft teleportation flash, and I was back in Algora, opposite a small hotel huddled between two arcades. Exactly what I needed. A few steps, and I was inside. Without stopping, I warmly greeted the bored lady at the counter and went into my private room. Equally quickly, I picked out the bag of gold and again retreated into the corridor, not looking at the precious objects of the legendary sets so as not to tempt myself. In addition to the gold, I picked up the collectible wolf figurine, the adult tyrant. I took this just in case. Walking down the cobble streets of Algora, my thoughts kept going over the plans. First, the Mage's Guild. I required immediate training and improvement of spells. Then, the village of Selenium, where I intended to appear before sunrise. Farmers and villagers rise early, and the mayor is no exception. Complete the quest, and then a short jog to the estate of Mr. Cedric, with whom I was to have an exciting conversation. We'll talk, and I'll find out the conditions, or the price. I am sure that he will not give up the legendary items just like that, not for just any price. That means that the avid collector Cedric will give me an extremely difficult task, or charge me a wild amount. Then I'll have to think of where to get such money. I wasn't going to take the existing armor with me. I didn't want to give Cedric a chance to covet my treasure. If my reputation wasn't enough, I'd offer him a unique statue of the wolf in exchange. I'd be able to receive at least one item of the set. I went cautiously to the Mage's Guild and tried to stay tightly against the wall. What if they would throw me out, as one unfavored by the gods? Once in the room with colored arches, I darted around furtively, slipping like a snake between the players, and nearly leapt into the passage leading to the Master of Elemental Magic. The black-bearded wizard was in his place. A critical glance at me, and the mage grunted and muttered, "Not bad, young man. Your ability grows by the day." "Thank you, sir," I bowed my head. "You want to improve the rank of your spells? Flaming Coal and Ice Needle have long been ready to turn into something more deadly." "It is for this that I have come. I'm ready." "Good. You want to increase the rank of both spells?"
"Yes."
20 gold in full, young lad."
"Here you are."
Training costs were growing at a high speed. The magician ran a finger over the page inscribed in a thick tome, underlined a rune with his nail, and nodded, "It is done." I became the owner of 2 elemental magic spells of the 3rd rank, a handful of coal, and ice shard. No achievements were offered, and I was not raised to the rank of a natural magician. Well, this was to be expected. The higher you go, the slower you grow. Sad, but quite logical. However, as far as I understood, the next increase was going to come soon, and it would be a shift at least to the 2nd grade. The benefits promised to be good. I said goodbye to the mage, who had lost interest in me, and went back into the hall and ducked into another arch in the Faculty of Natural Magic. Here, too, was the same story, and I became the owner of Thorn Wall, much more spiky, high, and barbed. Though one may still succeed in breaking through it, the price is a large number of life points. True, you can get around a thorn wall, but that depends on entirely different things, such as the rank of the enemy and their artificial intelligence. And if they are an enemy player, well, the surprise factor is not unimportant.
when a wall of thorns appears right in front of your face. I had nothing more to do in the mage's guild, and hurried toward the exit. And I walked quickly and hunched my shoulders, though the old magician had told me that the attitude towards me was strictly neutral. Who knows, maybe they'll get me in the back to please an angry goddess. As soon as I appeared on the threshold, I activated a teleport scroll and squinted against a transition that was too bright. Why not use the scroll right away? Well, on the grounds of the guild, the scrolls of this kind do not work, as well as many other scrolls of the same kind. For the locals here, however, the case is not the same. I have several times been thrown out of the guild with the help of a magical pink teleport. Finding myself in a small village square, I looked up at the lightening sky and, with a satisfied nod, hurried to the largest house in the village. Dawn was not far off, and that means the elder would soon raise himself out of bed and come to his doorstep, and then I will be waiting to surprise him, in the form of a bunch of purple cloaks delivered right to him. I am sure that early in the morning the elder would have preferred to see a luxurious blonde, but there's nothing to be done about that. And so it happened. As soon as the first rays of morning sun lit the yard, the front door creaked quietly open, and the elder walked out, yawning sedately. At the sight of me, he gave me an unhappy grimace, but the reputation had done its job, and he broke out in a gap-toothed smile of welcome. I presented to him the same joyful grin, stepped closer, and reached for my bag, in which was lying the precious loot, torn rags that were once the cloaks of spellcasters. After the village of Selenium, the contrast was striking. Behind the giant gates of Mr. Cedric's estate was a large courtyard which looked, most of all, like a miniature town square. Square in shape, lined with stone tiles in two colors, gray and white. On the other side of the yard, the rich facade of the high stone building, framed by magnificent flower beds, neatly trimmed bushes and trees were everywhere. On the side, in the shadow of two great trees, was hiding a delicate white gazebo, located on a small island in the middle of a pond with small agile fish, gold, silver, and emerald. Inside the gazebo were a few wicker chairs and a table. Under the ceiling was a lazily swaying silver cage with two singing birds, very beautiful, with richly colored plumage and ruffles at the neck. Beautiful? And not shutting up for a second. Chirping loudly, bastards. I should have just let them out. But one cannot do that. Mr. Cedric would not understand such an action. Why do I speak of these innocent birds so cruelly? Because, for almost an hour, I have been sitting in this very arbor and listening to their incessant bird song, chirp and chirp, chirp and chirp. I do not suffer alone. At the entrance to the pavilion is a guard, one of the village who stands at the gate. He led me inside and stood close, like I was a guest of honor who couldn't be left alone without a proper escort, which meant that I had to put up with the birds. Everything went surprisingly quickly and painlessly, without the slightest delay. As soon as I was inside the gates of the estate and voiced this request, I was immediately allowed inside. Not into the house, however. I was only left in the yard, able to temporarily occupy the master's gazebo. Even wine was poured for me into an iron cup with an inferior engraving. Right, a village is a village, even with Mr. Cedric. Seeing movement, I hurriedly put down the unfinished cup of wine and rose to my feet. I must meet the master of the house standing. From the front door, a group of four was approaching. Ahead was a lean man with a powerful expression. His lips were pursed, eyes slightly protruding, and a nose more like an eagle's beak hanging over his mouth. The master of the manor. On his sides were two guards, both unremarkable except for the ornate armor. But behind the master there was something human, man. About these sort of people one usually says that they are gorillas.
and I would go further as to say King Kong, incredibly tall and broad-shouldered, with long arms and thick limbs, a wide forehead, eyes hidden under protruding eyebrows, and a square jaw which made him seem as though he could bite through anything, including nails and chains of wrought iron. A humanoid grown to slightly under 2.5 meters. Against the background of this giant man, Mr. Cedric appeared like a pygmy. Oh, I almost missed one detail. The giant bully had only one ear, strongly protruding and large. The second was missing, for unknown reasons about which I did not care to know. Most pleasing was the fact that the wealthy landowner was not accompanied by players, only locals not in the environment, at least for now. And that's great. I wouldn't have liked to talk about the silver legend in front of any players. Lucky. But there could very well be someone from the Crimson Cross occupying the district, as the Germans in July 41. Damn. Fraulein, where's the hammer? Oh, haben ein Schwein. Das ist fantastic. Ugh. Having stopped peering at the accompanying locals, I focused on Cedric, feeling very strong jitters. Of course, I struggled so hard to get here, killed so many, and dug up so many gardens. The landlord did not disappoint me. The conversation was started from afar. "I'm glad, very, very glad to see such a valiant warrior. I've heard of your name, the brave deeds for the benefit of civilians under my protection," benignly began Cedric. "Hero, I'm sure your father is proud of you." "Yes?" I choked. "Wow. Oh, that is, I'm deeply grateful for such flattery and kind words, Honorable Mr. Cedric. You exaggerate my merits." "I was always able to distinguish a real hero." Mr. Cedric didn't agree with me. "You'll achieve a lot, young man. You're honest, brave, kind, and ready to help for free, a real paladin, a selfless spirit." "Oh, thank you," I bowed briefly. "I didn't have to help very much. Your people are already under the protection of your patronage. You're very thoughtful, sir. I've heard it often from your villagers. All pray for you." "Such is the share of an honest man," sadly sighed Mr. Cedric, coming closer and putting his hand on my shoulder. "Day and night I care only for the welfare of my people. Day and night. Only thanks to the help of people like you am I able to cope. Well, young hero, I heard you wanted to see me for a very important matter. Yes, you sit down. Have a drink of wine." Having concluded his welcoming speech, Mr. Cedric carefully wiped the hand he had just removed from my shoulder with a laced handkerchief. At the sight of this, my happy mood vanished. That bastard, as if he patted a dirty dog's neck and is now hastily rubbing the dirt off his fingers. "Yes, it's very, very important," I choked, barely able to keep the smile on my face. "I am listening carefully, Rosgard, my friend." He flashed a toothy smile, barely noticeably stumbling at the word friend. "But hurry up. I have a lot of important things to attend to. Moreover, today I am leaving to Algora. The king wishes to see me. Tonight there is a big and important reception at the royal palace." "It's an honor," I muttered, watching from the corner of my eye as the landlord casually cast away his lace handkerchief. He wouldn't even put it in his pocket, as though it were completely dirty and spoiled. And he does it so calmly, so matter-of-factly. How I would like my fist to meet his face. But I cannot, cannot. I am actually a nobody, just a passerby who did a few good deeds and was welcomed. And he's a local king and god, powerful, rich, arrogant, ugly, if only to get him right between the eyes. Quietly, quietly, Ross. "Oh, yes," nodded Cedric. "His Majesty appreciates my merits before the crown. I am listening, Rosgard." I said in a hoarse voice. Hastily I cleared my throat, put a smile on my face, and continued, "I am very glad to meet you, Mr. Cedric. Across Valdira there is a rumor that you have assembled one of the richest and most famous collections.
I myself am not a stranger to the beautiful, and try as much as I can to collect ancient weapons and armor, especially armor.
Collector, said the landowner in a much more lively and sincere way, his gaze dominated by confusion at my clothes and dusty shoes.
And you manage to collect something really interesting and unique, friend Rosgard?
Yes, I nodded, slowly pulling the statuette of Tyrant from my pocket.
Here, look here, my latest acquisition.
For a full minute, the gazebo was in silence. Mr. Cedric stared intently at the figure in my hand, and his entourage stood and stared indifferently in different directions.
"This is quite unique," slowly began Cedric, staring hungrily at the statue of the wolf, "and is part of a special collection of figurines."
"Yes, I know," I answered gravely. "A unique thing. I had gotten to the landowner. He was hooked. I proved that we had a topic for conversation. And now we go on to the main subject, gently and slowly.
What do you want for it, Rosgard? For the figure. I am willing to pay generously if you are willing to give it to me."
"Sell? No, Mr. Cedric." I allowed a lazy and relaxed expression to float over my face. "Money interests me very little. Clothing, gold, jewelry, it's all imaginary, alien to me. I am a collector, and that says it all. Collecting is the main and only passion in my life."
Now I insolently copied the language and behavior of a cheerful old man, an inveterate collector and a good friend to his father.
"I understand. Exchange?"
"Yes," I said. "An exchange is possible, if you have something worthy of my collection."
"From what I understand, you already know what kind of object exactly you would like to receive in exchange for this trifle." The landlord's eyes narrowed, and he crossed his arms over his chest.
"Oh, yes," I grinned. "I know. I am interested in two subjects in your collection, two specimens of ancient armor, and I am ready to discuss..."
"Which ones?" interrupted Cedric. "What specimens of armor exactly?"
Why did he get so tense?
I guess you've heard of the Silver Legend, Mr. Cedric."
"Yes," snapped the patron, his voice rising. "No."
"Sorry, so yes or no?"
"Yes, I've heard of the legend," hissed Cedric, whose complacency disappeared without a trace. "No, I do not accept and am not selling any parts of this armor, no."
"But I..."
"Correct me if I'm wrong," the landowner leaned in. "After all, we are now discussing the armor of God, and you think I would agree to exchange them for a tiny statue of a wolf?"
"It's not God armor," I corrected him automatically, frantically trying to collect my thoughts. "Damn, I feel as if I'm Jackie Chan."
"What?"
"Jackie Chan, I say. I mean, it isn't God's armor, Mr. Cedric. It's armor of a great warrior."
"This armor is blessed by God," repeated Cedric.
"A fallen god," again I corrected him.
"And because of this, they are even more valuable," he grinned triumphantly. "After Gravital fell, he could no longer bless or curse. That makes the Silver Legend so unique. You must know that Gravital put his blessing on only two armor sets, one male and one female, for the two warriors, and only two weapons are blessed. Among these is the silver hammer. And yet, Gravital cursed only one thing, as for which one I still have yet to find out."
"You know a lot, Mr. Cedric," I said with a conciliatory smile. "I see you are a true connoisseur of beauty."
"A unique connoisseur. I collect unique things, and that's why I won't give you any part of the Silver Legend. You will not get them, Rosgard."
"Huh," I said slowly, in turn, getting up. "We could discuss it. Why hurry?"
"Not selling, and won't trade," cut off the landowner, pulling another napkin from his sleeve and wiping his forehead viciously.
"That's understandable. He was sweating profusely."
"No way,"
I said, feeling all hope slip away. I am sure you have things in mind that you'd like to see in your rich collection. After all, it's not yet complete.
Yes, it's not complete, but where did you find out that it is in my possession? Where did you get such information?
How did I find out? I repeated. How am I sure? I began my quest only recently, but I was able to get 3 items of the Silver Legend already.
Repeat yourself.
Huh?
Repeat your words, friend Rosgard, hoarsely croaked Cedric, stepping close to me and gripping my shoulder with his bony hand.
What did you say? Cedric's other hand fished a thin golden chain out of his pocket, at the end of which swung a clear azure stone. I have 3 objects of the Silver Legends, I repeated obediently, and I found them, one after the other. The confusing azure stone did not alter my words, but Cedric, he peered into the stone and recoiled as though struck. He croaked,
"You're telling the truth. The truth. I searched for many years. Bribery, theft of old scrolls, the search for Grimm, and it got me nowhere. How did you in a few weeks find as many as 3 items from the Silver Legend? Damn, boy, years!"
"Well," I shrugged, "apparently I was lucky. And I can get much more, Mr. Cedric. I can get something truly unique and unrepeatable. A special item for your collection."
"Sell it to me," Cedric didn't hear. "Sell me the Silver Legend."
"Sell?" I smiled triumphantly. "What do you mean? It's the armor of God."
"A fallen god,"
said the landlord, and I immediately retorted, "for this reason is more valuable." There. We both stood frozen, throwing aside our masks and drilling unfriendly glances into each other. Finally, Cedric stepped back and said quietly, "If only you weren't a stranger." Yes, if I wasn't a player, I would have long been robbed and tortured. But I'm a stranger, I smiled faintly, and so as not to provoke him, added, "and do not carry anything valuable. Everything is stored in a place which only I can enter.
Even the gods cannot breach it."
"I know what place you're talking about," said Cedric. "All foreigners have such a place. The secret hole where one can't enter, I know."
"A local, aware of the personal rooms of players?"
I had not heard before of such an awareness. The subject is taboo for locals. "So, how do we proceed, Mr. Cedric?" again I began. "It's not good when a single thing is divided between 2 collectors, and I think the Silver Legend is one complete thing. I'm sure that I will find the rest in the near future."
"Shut up, friend Rosgard, I'm thinking."
"The Internet is thinking? The greedy collector weighing his options? Well, I will keep quiet and wait." The landowner thought for a long time, no less than 10 minutes, during which I contemplated the surface of the pond, watching the golden fish swim. Songbirds, as if anticipating trouble, did not dare to open their beaks, fearing that their owner would have them roast. And he is very angry. He quickly forgot about my reputation in these lands and all the good deeds committed by me. Or is he smart enough to know that all these things were just to get an audience with him?
"I agree."
The short phrase was uttered by Cedric with obvious effort, reluctantly. But his eyes somehow gleamed with unhealthy malice. I saw this clearly. In the world of Valdira, there is no lack in emotions. And then Cedric smiled again. Not good. "I am listening, Mr. Cedric."
"I agree to give you all parts of the Silver Legend in exchange for just one thing. You'll have to find it and bring him to me, and we immediately make the exchange. Do you agree, friend Rosgard?"
Anticipating trouble, I quickly blurted out, "Maybe you just want to sell it. I won't skimp on the price."
"No. I have enough gold that you have not ever dreamed of,
only exchange," Cedric growled. "Do you agree?"
"Yes."
"Good. I want you to find the only thing that was cursed by the god Gravital and bring it to me. After that, we make the exchange."
"Attention, unique job. You got the job, Divine Curse. Find the thing damned by the..."